Do you ever wonder how government in Cincinnati operates? Like, really operates? Sign up for WVXU's City Government 101 newsletter. You'll learn all the basics and more in a weekly email, giving you the tools you need to stay informed and get involved. Sign up at WVXU.org.
Hi, I'm Dave. Dave from before. Dave Hill from Show Business. Dave Hill, co-host of The Novelizers. And today on the show, from the Four Seasons and Reno 911, Carrie Kenny Silver, New Yorker writer Sarah Hutto, plus Lauren Olson. It's The Novelizers.
Don't want your popcorn, don't want your milk duds, don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance, don't show me fist fights, just show me words printed out under the book light. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie. Give me sentences, paragraphs, and nothing to see. Yeah, novelize the movie. Write a book and turn it into a podcast.
Welcome to The Novelizers, the show where we turn classic films into hilarious audiobooks narrated by celebrities. And we have a splendid episode for you today. Who's on the show, Steven?
So many people. Carrie Kenny Silver is a five-time Emmy nominee and the co-creator of the iconic series Reno 911. And she stars as Anna in the Netflix series The Four Seasons, alongside Tina Fey and Steve Carell.
I want to be on that show.
I'd like to watch that show, and I do. Sarah Hutto is a comedy writer whose work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, Mad Magazine, Reductress, and McSweeney's. That's basically every comedy publication that exists, I think.
All reputable. I've only written, you know, that's not a competition, but I've only written for The New York Times and McSweeney's, so I guess that makes me garbage.
I got rejected by McSweeney's once. Does that count for something?
I think so. It's some sort of acknowledgement.
Yeah. Lauren Olson is a writer and improviser living in Portland who has performed with the Magnet Theater.
Great. You know, all season we've been novelizing the film The Dark Knight. If you haven't heard it all, go back and listen, because it's amazing. We've come to the end of the film, but I bet you're asking, what happened to all your favorite characters like Batman, Mr. Joker, and have speculated what happens to Gotham City after the credits roll? And Carrie Kenny Silver is narrating for us. Carrie Kenny Silver, novelize us.
The Novelizers, The Dark Knight, Epilogue. Novelized by Sarah Hutto, narrated by Carrie Kenny Silver. Batman couldn't believe it. After spending his entire adult life defending Gotham in the most dramatic manner possible, he was finally getting a taste of retirement. Having Gordon blame him for Harvey Dent's crime spree might seem like an easy way out, but Batman didn't care about that anymore. Dent was dead. Rachel was dead, presumably, after being blown up with some barrels of oil. Her remains were never found in the incineration, so he'd always hold out a small hope she might emerge, branded and renewed from the wreckage. Batman sort of liked it when women had sexy flaws in their features. A subtle lazy eye, the faint shadow of a mustache, one arm being significantly shorter than the other. But in Rachel's case, we'd be talking third-degree burn scars, significant disability, and possibly a newly acquired psychiatric disorder that made her really mean. These weren't judgments derived from burn survivor studies, but from how things usually worked out for Batman, which historically was pretty wild. "It's so weird," he thought to himself as he French-pressed his coffee. Rachel ended up burning to death, while Dent, the guy she was banging on the side who I killed for being a crazy jerk, also ended up with burn scars being his whole thing. "So crazy," Batman muttered out loud. He still didn't completely understand how to use his French press. He'd unfortunately never watched Alfred complete these tasks for him. For instance, he didn't realize that the mesh strainer had to go on top of the ground coffee. It's not that he was stupid. It's just that he was such a genius, so consumed with justice, there just wasn't room in his special brain for everyday chores that regular people do. Because of this, his coffee was always part liquid, part solid. Batman knew coffee shouldn't be part solid, but he'd learned to accept it. Just as he'd learned to accept Rachel's death and the blame for all of Harvey's shenanigans. Batman's proctologist once asked him, "What the hell is going on with your colon, Bruce?" and Batman explained that he had to drink all his coffee solid now since his butler quit. "But what are you going to do?" Bruce asked rhetorically. "Well, there's like a million coffee shops all over Gotham," said the proctologist. "Surely you can afford to buy pre-made coffee. You paid for your colonoscopy out of pocket." And the truth is, Batman could afford to go to a coffee shop, but he could never think up a good fake name for them to write on the cup. He'd officially gone back to being just Bruce after falsely confessing to the attempted murder of Police Commissioner Gordon's family, but he could tell people still pretty much knew who he was. The Batman mask, which seemed so perfect when he first came up with it, actually revealed most of the lower half of his face. It was sort of like when censors put a black bar over someone's eyes to make them anonymous, but when you see it, you think, I can still tell who that is by filling in the space where their eyes would be with my imagination. It was like that. And Bruce also got the feeling that people didn't really buy the whole thing of him turning bad and trying to kill a little boy. It was just too far-fetched. Over the months following Dent's demise, Batman realized more and more how much his whole plan to take the blame for Dent's crimes just screamed martyr. How did he always end up repeating the same patterns? Rachel had been right before being doused in gasoline and blown up in that factory. He did need a therapist. He'd been leaning on Alfred as a sounding board for a long time, despite the fact that Alfred didn't seem to have any successful relationships either. Sometimes Batman wondered what Alfred was up to at a given moment. Was he working for someone else? Bezos? Musk? Batman hoped Alfred was golfing somewhere with a cigar. Alfred had never mentioned golf, and Batman never saw him smoke, but it was still a comforting image. Batman was pretty bad at golf. Luckily, there weren't any golf courses in Gotham for him to humiliate himself on. Just a gun range and laser tag and rage rooms. Batman did really like rage rooms, even though he was sure that made him some kind of cliché. But there was just something really pure about smashing stuff with a hammer. Catharsis helped Batman self-regulate, a practice he struggled with. Crime-fighting had been a huge part of how he dealt with his mood fluctuations and avoidant personality disorder. His proctologist had been the one to diagnose him. During an exam, he'd said, "I'm not officially qualified to diagnose psychological stuff, but I'm still a doctor, and I can totally tell you have it." Batman couldn't believe it. First a colon full of coffee grounds, and now a personality disorder. When does it ever end? Even worse, there was no medication or super effective treatment for avoidant personality disorder. His proctologist told him he just needed to open up more and be more honest about his feelings. That had always been hard for Batman. His parents were murdered by a clown and he was homeschooled. No wonder his relationships always ended with people being upset with him or getting murdered by the same clown. Even if he could prevent the women in his life from being set on fire or becoming vigilantes with their own personality disorders, he still couldn't see himself ever ending up with the mythical, steady, no-drama girlfriend. At least now, in his semi-retirement, he could enjoy some peace and quiet. Unfortunately, this also meant not intervening when there was crime. He was forced to watch crime unfold all day long, and it was all he could do to restrain himself from stepping in. "Just don't get involved," he reminded himself as he walked past some hooligans pushing an old woman with a walker onto the subway tracks. "You're just Bruce now. Batman is retired. Nobody wants him around," he thought, over the cries of the old woman and the subway rattling in the distance. The orphanage fire had been the worst. After moving out of the Batcave, Batman ended up living in an apartment building adjacent to an orphanage, which was an ironic choice since he was also an orphan. Even more ironically, he just so happened to be walking by the one night some hooligans were starting a fire. He was on an evening stroll to the local Gotham Fire Department to get his industrial-sized fire extinguisher refilled. They expire every 10 to 12 years. There he was, innocently bringing home his newly loaded fire extinguisher when he spotted some ne'er-do-wells playing with gas cans and matches on the orphanage playground. Of course, he immediately thought of Rachel. The burnished okra of the gas cans brought back the umber of her hair, the spark of the matches, the light in her eyes. Of course, there was also her having been burned alive and almost 100% definitely dead. The arson reminded him of that, too. Such a sad thing, he thought. Full of remorse at not being able to prevent the crime he was witnessing from taking place. But Batman is no longer a hero. He's retired, and it was never my job to prevent crime anyway, he reasoned. Wait, that's the police. But still, the retirement part is true. Batman could barely sleep that night. He kept thinking about Rachel and Alfred. Also, there was the deafening roar of the fire next door, punctuated by orphan screams. But those were mostly drowned out by his turbulent thoughts. When the fire chief came banging on his door early the next morning, it turns out he was recorded on a security camera walking past the blossoming arson scene with a fire extinguisher. He didn't answer. He was too tired from ruminating all night. He couldn't bear facing life to get out of bed to brew another steaming hot cup of something Alfred would have used to fertilize the rhododendrons. Days and weeks rolled by. Batman got more and more depressed. Multiple summonses came in regard to his involvement in the orphanage fire, but he just used them as scrap paper for his doodles of cool cars and weapons that he might one day build again if he could ever be convinced to come out of retirement. After Lucius had destroyed his groundbreaking state-of-the-art surveillance equipment, Batman hung up the towel on technological pursuits, as well as running Wayne Enterprises, to focus on being just a regular private citizen. He got why Lucius smashed up all of his TVs and cameras in the name of public privacy, but it still seemed like it was mostly about jealousy. He longed for a group of guys to pal around with, but once they found out he was rich, in perfect shape, and had a high IQ, most men were just too threatened to be his friend. It's almost like I'm the poster boy for the male loneliness epidemic, Batman thought to himself. And then there was Alfred. Alfred was his closest confidant and like a father figure for most of his life. Sure is a shame that guy quit and left no forwarding info, he thought to himself, especially right after losing my girl, my home, and my reputation. And all as this arson trial is really starting to heat up. Batman no longer tried to avoid the fire and heat puns, which he found unavoidable ever since his girlfriend had been burned alive. Batman didn't even want to look at the pile of laundry in the corner. Alfred had taken care of all that for him. He never knew if Alfred did the laundry himself or paid for someone else to do it. Clean clothes just used to appear in his closet, but not anymore. Since becoming a recluse, Batman had taken to ordering clothes from Amazon, wearing them until they smelled like French onion dip, and then donating them anonymously to the orphanage. Then he'd order the same clothes again and wait. He kept meaning to wait to donate the smelly clothes until after the new clothes arrived, but he always forgot. So he was forced every couple of weeks to spend a few days alone and naked in his apartment, waiting for the clean clothes to arrive. On one hand, he enjoyed the freedom that came from being naked. As long as he kept the curtains down, he wasn't hurting anyone. In these moments, he truly felt free to be his authentic self. On the other hand, it was sort of gross to spend hours at a time with his bare ass on the same couch cushion. He wondered what Alfred would think. Batman had never seen him without his pants on, and Alfred was a boomer. The idea of him being impressed was unlikely. Batman wiped some spaghetti off his chest with a throw pillow and checked his stocks app. Wayne Enterprises, Wank, was still in the shitter. It was just going to have to stay that way until he was ready to come out of retirement, and no amount of burned orphans was going to change that.
Thank you, Carrie, and we'll be back with more novelizers right after this. It's an advertisement. That could go, just put it right here.
Do you ever wonder how government in Cincinnati operates? Like, really operates? Sign up for WVXU's City Government 101 newsletter. You'll learn all the basics and more in a weekly email, giving you the tools you need to stay informed and get involved. Sign up at WVXU.org.
And we're back. Each week on the show, we talk to someone who worked on the film The Dark Knight. Today, our own Kevin Carter sat down with two folks who worked, as mentioned previously, on the film. Let's hear that interview.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us for the interview portion of The Novelizers. I am Kevin Carter, and I am here with two, not one, but two special guests today. I'm with Myrtle McGee and Edna Polk, who were the on-set masseurs. I don't know how to say that phrase. Masseurs. Ladies, how are you doing today?
Oh, we are doing so well, and thank you so much, Kevin, for having us today.
Thank you for having us, Kevin, and I just want to help you out real quick. You can call us masseurs or massage therapists.
We go with either term, and we like them both.
Yeah, they try to say massagers or something, and that's not... I wouldn't say we're massagers.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, because personally, when I hear massagers, I think vibrators, and I don't know why, but that's where my head goes.
The massaging that we do on set when we are working typically doesn't involve vibrators, but we're not going to rule it out.
Well, because there was a one time that I was having a little bit of a plantar fasciitis in my foot. And as a result of that, I developed an issue and I had to use a vibrator.
Yeah. Okay. You had to use an actual vibrator.
Oh, yes. Okay. Vibrators are more effective for breaking down the fascia than perhaps a traditional massage.
Okay. You said that you got plantar fasciitis in your foot, and you specified in your foot. Is there somewhere else you can get, you know, plantar fasciitis there?
Well, no, but sometimes people don't know that.
Not a problem. I appreciate that. So we all want to know, we know what a masseur is. But we want the audience want to know what a masseur is for your job, your specific job as an on-set masseur. Like, what are you specifically doing?
Well, that's a great question, Kevin. So now, when you're on the set of a film, these days can go long, and I mean really long.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're on set and you're on your feet and you're working hard and you're concentrating, you know, your body can start to break down in ways you don't even expect. Now, you bring a masseur into the situation to just help relax the most important people on set.
It's a tense set. It's a tense set. Let me just let you know that if you're familiar with the set at The Dark Knight, that was a tense set.
You said you loosened them up?
Oh, we loosened them right up.
Everyone. Actors, crew members.
So how does somebody like you two have the hand strength to do the entire crew, like cast and crew, for massages? How did you guys get through that?
I have absolutely absurd grip strength for my age. And now I also would like to say, I think the two of us are ageless in a way, because we have been doing this for, well, on set for nearly 70 years as a team. And we're in the peak of our career. In the peak.
We're in the prime of our lives and our careers.
Yeah. So, and when you say as a team, are you guys, is it both of you massaging one person? Or are you like, you know what I'm saying? I can just imagine like WWE or something like that. It's just a tag team. I'm out. Somebody else come in and finish the job. How do you guys do it as a team?
Always a double massage. Absolutely every time. Neither of us will touch another person by ourselves.
Well. Hold on just a minute now. I do remember a little one-on-one you had with Mr. Michael Caine on set.
Oh, my.
I would say there was a few exceptions to the rule.
Now, listen, Edna. There is a distinction between the professional masseusing we do and the side experiences we have with people on set. Now, that would not have been considered a massage, though it was an intimate situation.
Yeah, that sounds like quite a story to tell. Like, I don't think we need to hear that story.
Up to you, Kevin. I'm happy to share any details you'd like.
I'm okay. I think I'm all right. Just the thought of Michael. I'm okay. I'm all right. Thank you, though. I appreciate that. So for you to be so good at massages, do you judge or are you very critical of other people giving you a massage? Do you coach them? Like, no, you're doing it wrong. Or do you just let it happen?
Oh, I hate to be coached. I don't like to be coached. If I'm giving you a massage, you better shut your mouth right up. I can tell you a few stories from on the set.
There were a couple times when we were asked to leave the set because of some sort of altercation with one of the actors, but they still called us back. They couldn't keep us away very long because people would specifically request us.
They'd call us back and then their intimacy coordinator would get back on the phone and say, get them out of here. And then 2 hours later, we'd just be called right back. So we got to just go in and park in at the In-N-Out local to the set. There was one in Chicago. They were filming in Chicago. And they were filming in London and Hong Kong. And there was an In-N-Out about 5 minutes away in all three places.
Yeah, I did not know In-N-Out was that universal. You know, so it's good. You know what I'm saying? It's good. So... Do either one of you have a specialty? Like you're a shoulder person, you're a... I can only assume, Edna, you're a foot person. It's just an assumption. You might be a foot person, but is there any specialties you guys have?
I'm not a foot person. No, no, sir, not at all. Mm-hmm. That's probably why I have the plantar fasciitis.
Makes sense.
Because clearly I have not paid attention to my feet. Mm-hmm.
Bunny, I think he's talking about you helping, not your own feet, the feet of the people that you're massaging.
Oh, yeah. I love to touch feet. Oh, yes, I do. I love to touch feet. Yes.
She's really good at zoning, we like to call it. So she'll zone on the foot, she'll zone on the arm.
Okay.
You know, I do more of I'm more of a generalist. And what that means in massage is I sort of get on top, on the table, and I usually lie my whole body directly on top of the person while she's zoning. I'm generalizing, and I do a lot of just kind of pressing my own body into the body of the person beneath me.
She also does vibration. She goes, you want to hum?
Oh, okay. And you let the vibrations through your body connect to the other person that you're massaging, correct?
Yes, very relaxing for the recipient.
Helps break down the chi and the fascia.
Yeah, and you guys don't get any type of, complaints about the way you guys are giving massages and stuff?
Kevin, if everyone likes you, you're doing something wrong. That's our model.
All right.
Murda looks small. She's very petite, but she's heavy. She's heavy, and once she gets on top of you, it doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are, what you had for breakfast, you're not getting off that table unless she wants you off that table.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a condition where my bones are four times the density of other people's bones, and so I'm very beefy, even though I do look tiny.
Okay. It sounds like you got very strong bones, you know? It's a good problem to have.
Very strong bones, exceptional grip strength.
Yeah, good problem to have. So I want to, we're getting to the goss. Like, when it comes to being on set of The Dark Knight, were there any actors that you can tell us was the most tense? Like, oh, this person needs some work.
Anthony Michael Hall. He had a small role, but he was there every day.
He was tense and he was always around. And that was nice because we'd give him a nice, you know, rough massage, and then we'd move on to the next person.
He didn't complain once. Some of the actors complained.
Yeah, that's so who complained? Like, who wasn't satisfied with you guys' talent?
Maggie was never satisfied. She is a tough nut to crack.
I'm glad you said that, because in the movie, she was always frowning. She was always frowning in the whole movie, and I'm like, I'm assuming that it could have been she didn't get the right proper massage that she needed, and she didn't realize it.
Well, and not our fault. We offered it every single day.
Every single day. And you have to consider that she came to set and said, I'm not going to be broken. That's my character. I'm method. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the drawbacks of the method. I mean, when we were on Devil Wears Prada 1 with Meryl, I mean, she was so tense. She wouldn't let us touch her. Now, with a 10-foot pool, I tried to use one of those grabbers.
Mm-hmm.
Trash grabbers to pinch her shoulder.
Just pinch the back, the shoulder blades. Yeah. So as a person who has been in the business for, you said 70 years?
Plus.
Yeah, 70 plus years working together as a team in the business.
Yeah. So I just want to let you know, you look good for whatever age you are. You know, so I don't want to try to do the math right now. 70 is a long time. So is there a dream body that you would want to massage?
It is no.
I don't know who Ed is. I don't know who that is.
Ed Asner? You don't know Ed Asner?
You don't know who Ed Asner is?
Come on, Ed Asner.
Ed Asner.
I understand y'all saying the name multiple times. It just hasn't raised my awareness.
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
You might know him as Edward Asner.
I'm sorry.
Have you ever seen the movie Up? It's a Pixar.
Up.
He's the voice of the old man in Up.
Who framed Roger Rabbit? Who framed Roger Rabbit?
Was he the voice of Roger Rabbit too?
No.
Oh, I thought he was the same. I'm like, that guy got talent. He's Roger Rabbit and the old guy from Up.
He does have talent, though. I'll tell you what, he had some real strong back muscles. And boy, did I love to lie on his body. on the top and on the bottom.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, Myrtle. The accent is that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that Boston? Is that what kind of accent is that?
Because a little Boston, a little bit of Massachusetts, a little bit more Boston, and then a little bit of Maine and New Hampshire and mostly New England, and then sometimes a little bit of Texas.
Oh, and then just a dab of Texas.
I moved around a lot in my life.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Listen, I got a question for you girls. There's a lot of people in this world who wants to get into the field that you guys are into. And if there was anything you could tell somebody who wants to get in the field that you guys are into, like what kind of words of encouragement or what would you be able to tell them about, you know what I'm saying, getting on this job?
You want to grab everybody you can.
Yeah.
Everybody walks by. They're an opportunity.
Just start squeezing.
Just start touching and squeezing.
You grab the opportunity, and that's metaphorical, and then you literally and physically, you grab as many people as you can, and you start rubbing a little bit, and you just say, hey, how does that feel?
Yeah, okay. Listen, I want to thank you ladies, Edna and Myrtle, for joining us today. This has been quite an experience. I like to tell people, you know, it doesn't matter what the size of your job, you're still creating something beautiful. Right. And you guys were part of the Dark Knight and you are a part of history. So I don't ever want you to let that flame go out. You know, you ladies are important.
We've got a big career ahead of us, so no need to worry about flame going out on us.
Don't you worry about us. That's right. And mark my words, Anthony Michael Hall is on the upswing. So keep your eyes peeled for that gentleman. He's a little rough around the edges, and there are some parts of his body that could use a little bit of DLC, but, you know, keep your eyes peeled.
All right, I will, and the listeners will too. I want to thank y'all for coming out and joining us today. I'm Kevin Carter, and this has been The Novelizers. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, and thanks to this week's guests, Carrie Kenny Silver, Lauren Olson, Sarah Hutto, and thank you. Stephen, I got to say, yeah. Most of all, let's thank the listener, because without them, we're just, you know, people recording a podcast that no one listens to, which arguably is what most podcasts are statistically. That's not the case with this one.
You know, I'm going to say something to the listeners that I've never said before. I'm going to make myself a little vulnerable.
Oh, my God.
Listeners, I love you.
Oh, wow. I'm a little uncomfortable. But yeah, I think that's great that you opened up. And that way, could have used a heads up on it for next time, I guess. Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry.
No, that's good. Thanks. We'll be doing lots of fun stuff this summer, special episodes, live shows, and more. And then we'll return bigger and better. Or should I say, I'll be back. Let me practice this. Should I say, I'll be back? That's a reference to the next film we're novelizing, of course, Terminator 2, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger in the role of a lifetime. See you then, Steven.
Bye, Dave.
I had a nice time. I guess I'll see you around Hollywood.
See you there at that party that we're both going to.
Yeah, I'll see you at Hollywood parties. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, and produced by Steven Levinson. Hey, Steven. With Graham Douglas, Cole Emhoff, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Dennis DiClaudio, and Rob Kuttner. Music by Cole Emhoff. Additional editing by Sunita Haberlein. Graphic design by Crystal Dennis. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Performed by Knotts. Additional support by Elizabeth Tavares. Distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. The Novelizers is an AI-free podcast. Written, narrated, and edited, and scored entirely by human beings. Can you imagine that? The Novelizers is a work of unauthorized parody. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And please support us on Patreon. Copyright 2026, Novelizers, LLC.
Do you ever wonder how government in Cincinnati operates? Like, really operates? Sign up for WVXU's City Government 101 newsletter. You'll learn all the basics and more in a weekly email, giving you the tools you need to stay informed and get involved. Sign up at WVXU.org.